Good evening, everybody. It's 7 o'clock Eastern, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Coast, or rather the South Cars organization, and further follows the rules outlined in the FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This South Cars server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by KB8ZGL, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found on the World Wide Web at southcars.com and for our digital operation at voip.southcars.com. Your net control this evening is a doubleheader, KY6V and K6SUN, Gordon and Kathy. I'm KC2RMO. My name is Gary, located in Syracuse, New York's beautiful Outer Comstock section, with a temperature of 70 degrees. Prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. Having heard nothing, do we have anybody celebrating their birthday this week? Nothing heard there, and of course, nobody's getting any older. That's what it means. This is the South Cars VoIP Global Family Hour. The intent of this net is to encourage members, their families, and their friends worldwide to enter into an informal social net highlighting third-party traffic through the member station. Now, our program for tonight is trivia, and that's always a good time when we do that. So, having said that, and introduced our hosts for this evening, let's get them on the air, shall we? I think we have Kathy standing by here. So, Kath, come on aboard.
Well, good evening, Gary. Thanks for opening the session. And actually, it's going to be Gordon that starts this evening. But I do want to welcome everyone this evening. And, Gary, you know, I would have come aboard as a birthday station because I won't be available next Saturday. You know, that's our big move day. But my birthday is May 19th. So you can actually wish me a happy birthday. It'll be trying to unpack some of those boxes that we have moved in the past month. But the big move is ahead, May the 17th. So with that, Gary, I'll turn it back to you. But actually, Gordon, KY6B is going to begin this evening.
Well, Kathy, I was waiting. But I'm gonna be the first. I don't know. I'm assuming I'm the first on South Cars to wish you a happy birthday. And if I'm not, I'm among the first. So wish you a big old happy birthday anyway. And you've got so much going on with that move. I think you'd probably like to forget the whole deal. But I can tell you this: it's. You know, and you know, you've certainly been through moves before. They do get better. It only took us 4 years to unpack everything here. So, you know, there's no big deal at all. But it looks like it's going to be a good net tonight with the trivia. I always enjoy those. Those are always a good time. So we'll turn it back to you. It's KC2RMO. Back to the net.
All right, I'll pick it up at this point. Hi, Gary. And good evening, South Cars. Gordon here, KY6V. Thanks for opening up the show tonight, Gary. Hope everything is to your liking up there in Syracuse. And I liked your comment about taking 6 years to get unpacked. I certainly hope it's not going to be that long, but I'll bet you it'll be a good 6 months or better. Trying to figure out what box we put things in, and at the same token, we've labeled the boxes, so I don't know if that's going to be a help or not. You know, I was thinking, sitting back here earlier this afternoon, Kathy and I have run a host of trivia sessions with South Cars through the years. But I can't honestly tell you if I can recall when the last one was. It seems like it's been quite a while, Kathy. So, at any rate, I'm looking forward to getting back into this. I always enjoy running the show with you. So, guys and gals, let me buy a nickel here for a second. And we'll get started. The way Kathy and I normally do this is we bebop back and forth through the trivia session, each of us running, maybe four questions or so, getting the response for the audience and then passing it over to our partner. And in my case, Kathy will take the next four, and then we'll go back and forth like this until we've worn everybody out. This is the night to sharpen your pencil, get your brain organized, and let's have some fun. So one more break and we're going to get started. Okay, the first question this evening for the South Cars Trivia reads, this state is the only U.S. state that grows coffee. C-O-F-F-E-E. The answers are California, Florida, Texas, or Hawaii. Notice I pronounce that W with a V because that's the way that it's done. Anybody would like to take a challenge on this one? Suffix only and call now, please.
Victor Hotel.
R-M-O.
Okay. I've got Victor Hotel. Hi, Steve. And I've got R-M-O. I know they don't... They grow oranges in Syracuse, not coffee. Now, but I'm not sure about Louisiana. Hi, Steve. Go ahead and take the first shot. Over.
Hello, Gordon. Hi, everybody. Well, I happen to have had Kona coffee before, so I'll say Hawaii. And I should probably give a call sign, too. KF5VH.
Okay. Thanks for that, Steve. We've got two Hawaiis going here so far. GYF is in the text box. I don't watch that very closely, Doug, when I'm running a net, but I see you coming in with Hawaii also. How about you, Mr. Syracuse? Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm gonna ask Don who. Hawaii also. Because I have never had Kona coffee, but I've certainly heard of it before, and that is a Hawaiian product, so I'm going to go with that too. So cast my vote for your home state, sir. Back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Very good, gentlemen. You're all absolutely correct. A little side trip here. As you know, I was born in the islands. I was born on the big island of Hawaii, in the city of Hilo. But my father and mother really lived in Kona, on the Kona coast of the big island. And that's where I was raised for at least the first couple of years of my start of longevity. And that's where the Kona coffee came from. Very familiar with it, Steve. And enjoy it very much. All right, let's move on to the next question. And this one's going to be Steve's right off the top, I can tell. Lake Pontchartrain Causeway is the world's largest bridge. In what city and state is this bridge located? And how long is the bridge? New Orleans, Louisiana, San Francisco, Houston, Texas, or Seattle? Any takers, please? Over.
RMO.
Don't tell me Steve's going to set this one out. RMO, I have you. Anybody else? Oh, my goodness gracious. He's being stubborn tonight, Gary. He's still connected. He's still there. And he lives right next to it. RMO, go ahead, sir.
I think he got abducted by aliens. I think that's probably what the deal was. But I would say, of course, it's New Orleans. And how long it is a good question. I'm not sure about that, but I want to say 17 miles. And I could be wrong, but 17 miles sticks in my head. So, you know, you go with what you have up there, and sometimes you're right. So... but definitely it's New Orleans, and let's see if the aliens will return, and maybe Steve will come back. So KC2RMO, back to you.
Okay, thanks very much, Gary. Well, actually, the information that I have here, it's 24 miles. And I think that's pretty close in length. You're probably thinking 16 miles to Santa Catamaria off of California from the music standpoint. But New Orleans is correct. Before I go on, Steve, any comments on that? Over.
Yeah, it's so big that it runs between two cities. New Orleans is on one side, and Mandeville is on the other. And there's another one real close by to it that's 21 miles long, so it's not the longest by very much, KF5VH.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know about the second one. I've been across the main one there a couple of times during my career and enjoyed it very much. Okay, thanks, guys. Going on to the next question here. These lakes are the largest group of freshwater lakes in the world. They contain 6 quadrillion gallons of fresh water. 1/5 of the world's freshwater, fresh surface water, I should say. What is the name and where are they located? No multiple choice on this one. KY6V looking for answers. Over.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
And RMO.
And Sierra United November.
Well, I think we're in trouble here tonight. VXP, hi, Rick. RMO, okay, Gary, and SUN, Kathy. All three of these are northern people. And if they don't know the answer, they should move to Florida. VXP, hi, Rick, go ahead.
SN1TXP. Yeah, I think we all should know those Great Lakes. And just a little side answer. I remember in school how we had to learn all the names. Spell the word Holmes, and you spell every one of the lakes. Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, and Superior. Kind of enjoy all the lakes. A lot of fun. Oh, all kinds of activities around them, and always enjoyed it. And one day, maybe I'll go back up to visit again. And N1TXP back to net control.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard it put that way, Rick. Thank you. KY6V for South Cars, Holmes, and then just name off the lakes in that manner. It's almost like naming off the lines on a musical score. I like that. Thank you very much. RMO, are you going to dispute this or agree with it? Over.
No, indeed. No dispute at all. I'm going to agree wholeheartedly. And not only that, but a little background on the Great Lakes. They weren't always great. They started out as the okay lakes, and with a little practice became the pretty good lakes. And ultimately, after honing their lakiness for centuries, became the Great Lakes. So it takes work, but, you know, you stay with it and, you know, you get to the top of the heap. But here in New York, we are actually touching two of the Great Lakes. To the west of us is Lake Erie. To the north of us is Lake Ontario. And if you go really far north, you can also have a third access via the St. Lawrence Seaway, which is really kind of cool. If you ever get a chance to visit northern New York in the Adirondack area and get a chance to take one of those boat rides out to the St. Lawrence Seaway, you will see the Lakers, the big freighters, and they're very, very, very impressive. These are the ships that are very similar to, we've done a net on the Edmund Fitzgerald, and they're that type of a ship, and it's pretty cool to see. If you've never seen something like that, you really should. So, yeah, I'm going to say Great Lakes, and this is KC2RMO back to the net.
Okay. Thanks, Gary. Boy, it's almost like we got a staged audience here tonight. Guys and gals, all of these questions are funneling right into people with the know and in the neighborhood. And Kathy, you being an ex-Michigander, am I pronouncing that correctly? How say you? S-U-N, please.
Yes, Gordon, it was pronounced correctly. Actually, I lived in the state of Michigan for 55 years before I moved to the state of Florida, and actually both Gary and Rick are correct. It's the Great Lakes in Michigan. Have been to all of them. My son, as you well know, lives up there in Kalkaska, which is right along the Superior. But many, many times I went to those Sioux Locks to watch those ships go through the locks. And Superior of Michigan, Huron, Erie, and Ontario. I've been by them all. And, you know, it's, you know, they're very pretty up there. And if you ever look at that state of Michigan, the Mitten and the lakes that surround it, it's very unique in the United States. So I'll turn it back to you, Gordon. But Great Lakes in Michigan are my choice as well.
Okay. Boy, I'll tell you what, it's a tough staff here tonight. Everybody's right on it. Seems to me, Kathy, that what I need to do is, if I had one, I don't, you know, light up a cigar like Groucho Marx and see if I can twist this around a little bit. Because the next question that I have before I send it to you, Miss Kathy, is in the same area. And it reads, guys and gals, the largest body of fresh water in the world is this lake. Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, Lake Ontario, or... I've got Lake Ontario here twice. That doesn't make any sense. Anyway, Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, or Lake Ontario. Who wants to take this one on, please? Call now.
Well, I'll take it on. This is Sierra United November.
And TXP.
And RMO.
Okay, 3x3. When you answer this, Kathy, I'd like you to home in on Rick's comment about the word homes in naming the lakes. Does Superior have a capital S, Kathy? Over.
Well, I actually thought that was a very good way that his teacher had him remember. Yes, I would say all of them have capital S's, or capital letters. But yes, yes, Superior should have a capital S. I should let them go before me because, you know, but Rick also was living in Michigan, so I don't feel like I'm going to take it away from them. But I would say the largest body, and I've seen it, is Lake Superior. It's also the coldest body up there of the lakes. And, you know, Gordon, I know you lived along Lake Michigan. I think you probably swam in Lake Michigan maybe. But I'll tell you what, you ever dive in Lake Superior, your head will come up frozen. So I'll turn it back to you, and my choice is Lake Superior.
Okay, well, thank you, Kathy. KY6V for South Cars. And we're running a trivia net this evening. I didn't get up to Lake Superior, but I sure had my taste of Lake Michigan. I moved into Wisconsin and the shore of Lake Michigan in Racine, Wisconsin, back in 1969. And I traveled down to the lake, and I took off my shoe and stuck my big toe in there, and I said, ooh, and this was the 1st of June. Would you believe? I'm usually familiar with swimming in 50 and 60 degree water in the San Francisco Bay, but this baby was cold. And if it's colder up north, I don't want to have anything to do with it. RMO, your comments, sir. Over.
Well, remember to say the secret word, and a duck comes down and gives you $100. You got that cigar, you know. You got to paint one of those mustaches on. You'll be all set. No, I would say it's the, I agree with it. It's the big lake they call Gitchagumi. That's Superior for sure. And it is a huge lake. And if you ever want to have some fun with that or just see something interesting, Google that sometime and look at the images they take from space, and you get an idea of how big that is. But definitely, Superior has earned its name and a capital S. This is KC2RMO going back to the net.
All right, thank you very much. I sort of got you out of order with VXP. I apologize for that, Rick, but I'll be right with you. You know, some experiences never leave your memory. Talking about cold water, when I was quite younger, we used to go kayaking on Lake Tahoe up in the Sierras of California and the shores of Gitche-Gumee, which was really Nevada. And I turned over one day in a kayak and had to swim for it. And that's melted snow water, guys. And I never let that happen to me again. VXP, Mr. Ohio. Go ahead, sir.
That's okay. And one VXP here. Yeah, Lake Superior. And you mentioned Michigan. Boy, I don't know. It wasn't that cold. I was there in July in Lake Michigan visiting relatives in Chicago, and we used to go right over to Lake Michigan and never think anything of it. So I guess maybe those who live in the area are used to that kind of, and it wasn't really cold. To me, it felt really nice. We used to go swimming in it, and I remember one summer going around the southern edge of it right during a major thunderstorm that was hitting over Lake Michigan, and it actually made the shore of the lake look like the Atlantic after a good hurricane or tropical storm. Quite large waves, breakers, and there was a worry about possibly not making it through because the train went close enough to the shore, but they decided to go through anyway. But definitely Lake Superior is one big, deep lake. And I've never been into it, but I've been by it, and I agree. It's probably going to be very cold. In fact, I wouldn't be too surprised if there's still ice on the lake that hasn't quite melted. And one VXP back to net control.
Well, you know, Rick, I think that's probably a truism. Mike up there lives in the Upper Peninsula, and he's only, I don't know, a mile or so from Lake Superior, and he was checking in with us here a week or two ago saying that there's still ice that's floating ashore. So cold is cold, I guess. Okay, guys and gals, I'm going to turn it over to my other partner here. I've taken care of my four initial questions. Maybe you can stump them a little better than I can, Kathy, because they all knew the answers to mine. KY6V to K6SUN.
Well, thank you, Gordon. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. And I don't know, this crowd tonight is pretty intelligent. They're pretty current on some of these questions, so I doubt if I'm going to be able to stump them, but I sure will try. Some of my questions have to do with history, and you know that is one of my specialties, so I wanted to share some of that with you. So my first question is about a state, and it reads, what is the flattest state in the United States? What is the flattest state in the United States? We have Tennessee, and we have that grand state of Michigan again. We have Vermont, and we have the great state of Florida. So your choices again are Florida, Tennessee, Michigan, and Vermont. We're looking for the flattest U.S. state. So anyone want to take a try at this one?
RMO, I'll take a stab at it.
Oh, I get a turn here. Six, Victor.
Why is it R?
Victor Hotel.
My goodness, I have five here this evening. I have RMO, I have 6 Victor, VXP, OYZR, VH. Geez, I'm wondering what their answers are going to be. So let me start with you, Mr. Gary. tell us, by the way, you know, it's still 83 degrees here in Vero Beach, so it's a grand evening to be running this session. But, Gary, what's your choice this evening?
Well, thanks, Kath. It's an astounding 67 degrees here. We've been in the 80s for the past couple of days up here, which has been great. I've been working outside the house, and it's been great. We took the afternoon off and went to the movies. Let me plug the movie. It was a good one. It was called Mom's Night Out. It's absolutely hilarious. And if you have a chance to see it, it's opening, of course, Mother's Day weekend, but it's well worth seeing. A lot of fun. Anywho, I'm going to say that all those states have some degree of mountains or hills that that I'm aware of anyway. But I do know that the state of Florida is about as flat as a pancake. So I'm gonna say Florida. I'm pretty sure that's got to be it. Certainly Vermont has mountains, and I'm pretty sure Michigan does. So I'm gonna stick with Florida. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. KC2RMO, back to the net.
Well, Gary, you know, I would say Florida is the longest stretches far into the Atlantic Ocean. Actually, we do have several mountains down here. Michigan has Mount Holly, but I don't know if it has Porcupine Mountains. But I agree, some of the others have mountains. But I'll take your answer and see what anyone else has to share with us. Six Victor, what's your choice here this evening?
Well, thank you, Kathy. I'm going to pick Florida. KY6V here. You say that Florida has several mountains. They are honestly considered mountains down here by the inhabitants. They're the two largest in the entire state. The first is Sugarloaf Mountain, which is just to the western side of Orlando, and its height above sea level is 316 feet. The one that beats that slightly is a mountain up by Tallahassee in the northern part of the state, in our capital of the state, that is 326 feet above sea level. And for a guy that came from California, that's nothing. KY6V, go ahead, Kathy. Over.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Gordon. And actually, I was thinking of the mountains that I pass on the expressway all the time, which aren't real mountains, but, you know, they're above the road, so I consider those mountains. Thank you for sharing that. I have two votes for Florida. VXP, do you have the same choice or maybe another? Please come aboard with your answer.
This is N1TXP. You really got me thinking. I know most people think of Florida as being the flattest, but if you take all the hills and kind of level them off a little bit, Michigan is not really considered mountains. And I would almost want to say maybe Michigan. Because living up there, you know, they do have some areas that are, you know, kind of high up, but they're not really like mountains, unless you get up towards the Upper Peninsula. But I want to say, I'm going to take a chance at Michigan. I know most people think of, like I say, Florida being flat, but I don't know, this might be your... Little trivia question that might trick some people up. N1TXP, back to net control.
Well, thank you, Rick. And you know, like Gordon was saying, he comes from California where all those tall mountains, Oregon and Washington and Montana and probably Nevada, they all have huge, huge mountains, Colorado. And each of the states I gave you, to me, have mountains in them. So to think of a flat, it's really a hard decision to make, But we'll see what the answer is. And it's been a while since I've been up way up north to, like, Porcupine Mountains. And, you know, I talked about Mount Holly, but that's a man-made mountain for skiing. So we'll see what the correct answer is. My next person is Bernie, a YZR. Bernie, what would you like to share with us? I think you're from Wisconsin, and so maybe you have a different answer here. We're looking for Florida, Tennessee, Michigan, or Vermont. What is the flattest U.S. state? Come aboard.
Okay, Kathy, I hope my audio is sounding okay at this level, but I'm using a mobile now to check in. I bought a second outdoor antenna, and I got two Tram Browning antennas now, a 1481 and a 1480, and I use the 1480 on voice here and the 1481 on the node, and they're 14 feet apart horizontally there, so probably sound a little different than checking in with the HT, but this way people around here can hear me. They couldn't hear me with the HT indoors, so now they can hear me with the outdoor antenna. And of the ones that you mentioned there, I'd say Florida, but you said Tennessee. No, I purchased a 10-day pass one day, or one time, for around $100, and so I could travel all over. And I remember going to Tennessee and looking down at the clouds in the mountains there, so I thought, that's not very flat there. And Florida seemed, I lived there in 81, 83, that seemed like a pretty flat state there, so I'm going to guess Florida. Now, if you would have said Iowa, I would have had a hard choice, because I drove through Iowa, too, and it was mile after mile of flat cornfields. But you didn't mention Iowa. So I would have had a hard choice if you would have mentioned Iowa, but you didn't mention Iowa. So anyway, I haven't been any further west than Colorado, so I don't know what the western states are like. So, and I haven't been to Vermont, so I don't know. I haven't even seen too many pictures of that. I'm gonna unkey and reset. And finally, I wanted to say that I was going to get in on the tail end of the Lake Superior discussion there, but I didn't get the chance. I was going to tell you a story about Lake Superior, but anyhow, I went up there a few years in a row, and there was a company up there, a business right along the south shore of Lake Superior, and they gave us special permission to go through the gate and go down there, and I actually fished a few times on Lake Superior. I should say in Lake Superior. Had these, what they call chest waders, boots, and you walk in up to your chest there, and you had a team of people, and we dragged a net there when the smelt was running. They had a smelt out here yesterday, and I also was up there when I used to travel up there with my dad hauling milk replacer for veal calves. We'd stop in Ashland, and there's a farmer there right along the south shore of Lake Superior, too, and he had a large windmill to generate power there. And I also went up there twice to take the ferry up to Bayfield to Madeline Island, that I think is the name of it there. So, and back to the flat Florida is what I'm going to say there. 7-3 back to net, K6SUN, KC9YZR.
Well, Bernie, thanks for sharing your story about Superior. And thanks for answering Florida. Maybe the next time I'll have to add Iowa in there because, you know, I've been through some of those states and a lot of them are pretty, pretty flat. So with that, Bernie, hopefully you'll come back aboard as we continue because Gordon and I have quite some interesting questions to share with everyone this evening. Victor Hotel. What is your answer here? I saw what you had in the text box about some of the towers being bigger than some of the mountains. What is your answer for this question? Flattest state in the United States, Florida, Tennessee, Michigan, or Vermont? Steve, come aboard.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm going to tack on to Bernie and say that what they do with the smelt after they catch them is they send them to restaurants in the area. And let me tell you, you fry those puppies whole, and you serve those up, and man, is that great eating. Flatness depends on how you measure it. Flatness can either be from the highest point to the lowest point, or it can be how you feel when you walk. Certainly Michigan was flattened out by the glaciers that made the Great Lakes. But it's still a whole bunch hillier. I used to move around lower Michigan. Michigan is a lot hillier than Florida will ever be. Florida for me, please. KF5VH.
All right. All of you that said Florida are absolutely correct. And, you know, Rick, you were undecided whether it would be Michigan or Florida. But actually, Florida is probably, it's not very far above sea level. I'm not sure exactly my location, what it is, but it's not very far above sea level. And when you think of driving down to the Keys, I think they're very little above sea level. But, you know, someone who's lived in Florida longer than I may want to share that. But the correct answer is Florida. And, you know, Steve Schmelt, it's been a long time since I've had those two, but they were fantastic. We used to have someone give us buckets and buckets of those, and I sort of miss having those as well. So thank you, gentlemen. That was my very first question, and I had so much a conversation about it. Let's go to the next question. And this actually is a little bit of a history. What type of gun did John Wilkes Booth use to assassinate U.S. President Abraham Lincoln? Was it a Colt Peacemaker, a Smith & Wesson revolver, a Winchester rifle, or a Derringer pistol? So your question, what type of gun did John Wilkes Booth use to assassinate President Abraham Lincoln? A Derringer pistol, a Colt Peacemaker, a Smith & Wesson revolver, or a Winchester rifle? Any stabs at this one, please come aboard.
RMO.
VXP.
6, Victor.
All right, I'll go with the three gentlemen I have out here and see what their choices are for this interesting conversation in history. John Wilkes Booth used something to assassinate U.S. President Abraham Lincoln. So, Gary, what is your choice here? The Derringer, the Colt, the Smith & Wesson, or the Winchester? Come aboard and give us your answer.
Thank you, Kath. I'm kind of guessing, I'm just going with the resonance that's rumbling around in the canyons of my mind, because I seem to think long ago that I learned that he assassinated the president with a Derringer. My gut was saying it was a Peacemaker, but I don't think it was. I'm going to say he had a Derringer. He probably tucked it away in his vest. So my guess would be the Derringer. And we'll go back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
All right, Gary. We'll see if you're correct with your choice here. Now, I think it was able to be hidden, but you could do that with a rifle just as easily, and definitely a revolver. Not sure what a Colt Peacemaker is, and maybe someone will share that. But BXP, why don't you come aboard and take a stab at this question?
N1TXP. You know, it's just funny. Just happened to see a program just the other night about this. It was a Derringer. A little side note on it. It was, the barrel was a .44 caliber. However, the ball was .41, which meant that gun could not fire accurately beyond roughly about 10 yards. At 10 yards, you most likely would miss the target. But the Derringer was so small that it could be carried in a pocket. And as far as the Peacemaker, I think that was the Colt 45. It was the revolver that pretty well, I guess you would call it really more like Control of the West. One of the Colt guns that wasn't really big. It was just the fact that it was a gun that was well liked by most people back in the 1800s. And 1-3-XP back to net control.
All right, thank you both Gary and Rick for your choice. And one little bit of comment for these three gentlemen about the assassination of President Lincoln and John Wilkes Booth. My children in U.S. history and world history, this was a question they had not too long ago at the data house. Who was John Wilkes Booth or who assassinated President Lincoln? And they had no clue. So they definitely wouldn't have known how he was shot. So it's nice that you gentlemen thus far have an interest or a knowledge of the assassination in John Wilkes Booth, because definitely my children do not. So, Gordon, you're the end of my list for this question. How say you for this question about the assassination of President Lincoln and the pistol or the gun that was used? And let's see if you have the same as everyone else. KY6V, come aboard.
Well, I do, Kathy, and thank you. KY6V here. My recollection of history, and I remember this quite well, it was the Derringer. And I had a Derringer at one point. I don't have it anymore. It's a very small pistol. It's what I classify as a belly gun, meaning you've got to be in close approximation to the party that you're trying to hit to do any damage. In this day and age, considering when this happened with Lincoln, the normal party today would be using an Uzi to make sure he got the president and half the people around him. KY6V, back to you.
All right, thank you, all of you. You have the correct answer, and actually I don't have much knowledge of guns, but I know the Derringer is very, very small, and a rifle, I know about a rifle and a revolver, so I knew it was a very, very small gun, and I knew from teaching history that it was a Derringer. But, guys, you did a good job on that one. I couldn't stump anyone on that one. But let's try the next one. Now, this is a little different. Which of the following inventions was the first to be patented? And we have chewing gum, we have a dishwasher, we have a rubber band, and we have the cash register. So which of the following inventions was the first to be patented? The chewing gum, the dishwasher, the rubber band, or the cash register? Let's see who we can get to come aboard for this one.
RMO, I'm going to take a guess.
Well, Mr. Gary, I think this is stumping a few people out there. Not many people want to join you. Let's see what you would like to share with us this evening on that first invention.
Well, this is a total guess. I have no knowledge of this. This is just, I'm just going through stuff in my head, and I'm saying, well, yeah. I don't think chewing gum was patented before anything. And, you know, Murphy, I don't think there ever was a patent on chewing gum. I don't know. I mean, people used to chew tree sap, you know. I mean, how do you patent tree sap? So I don't think that was it, you know. But I and the cash register, I think, was later on in the evolution of things. But something tells me it might have been the rubber band. That for some reason somebody figured out how to make this little loop of rubber and thought it was a good idea and got a patent for it. So I could be a zillion % wrong on this, but my instinct tells me that it was a rubber band. So that's where we stand. KC2RMO back to net.
Well, Gary, your instincts were right. Actually, a dishwasher I wouldn't have thought at all was the first, because that's a newer invention. And actually, the cash register, it used to be that you would probably write things down and not sure about the chewing gum. But I was surprised with the rubber band. But that is actually the correct answer. So I didn't stump many of you on this choice of questions, but let's see what Gordon... I have one more to go before I turn it to Gordon. I have one additional one. But let me throw it to Gordon for just a moment. I think he has something he'd like to say. KY6V, before I do my final question, what would you like to... What's your input at this point?
Well, thanks, Kathy. I was just sitting back laughing. Do you realize that I was shooting rubber bands around at the kids in the classroom 30 or 40 years before you started teaching? KY6V, back to net. Over.
Well, that's something you've never told me, but, you know, that's something some of my children would do now, but they're not allowed to have rubber bands because they can do different things to themselves that we don't like to happen. But I do remember that when I was going to school, people shooting those rubber bands around. But usually they didn't, you probably used two fingers. I think they actually used something else. But thanks for sharing that with us. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I have one final question for you before we throw this to Gordon. Another history. You should all know this one. What famous document begins, "When in the course of human events"? No multiple choice. If you know history, you should know this answer. And Rick, you should know this answer. You're a history buff. Same with you, Gordon, and possibly you, Gary. But let's see who we can get to come aboard and throw out an answer to this question. What we're looking for is, what famous document begins, "When in the course of human events"?
RMO.
All right, Gary, I'm going to pick you up. Guys and gals out there, you know, this is a part of our history. Part of our history coming up in a few months. I'm surprised nobody else could come aboard. Let me throw it to you, Gary, and what is your answer to this question? When in the course of human events?
Well, I thought at first it was my power bill, but actually, it was the Declaration of Independence, and it's a great beginning. That preamble is just awesome, and look where it led us, right? Pretty much unforgettable for anybody who's ever read it. Back to the net, KC2RMO.
Well, before I give you the answer, I have a comment in the text box from Rick. Let's see what he would like to share with us this evening.
N1TXV had a phone call. I now have the phone turned off, so it's not going to interrupt. Declaration of Independence was going to be my answer as well. N1TXV.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. That probably was an easy question. But again, my children at my two schools would probably have said, "I have no clue." Unless I show them the book and show them that document, they probably have no clue. Those of us who were born and raised back in the 40s and the 50s probably have more information than these children do. But thank you. Both of you are correct. Declaration of Independence, which we pretty much will celebrate here in about a month and a half from now. So with that, that's the end of my four questions. I thank everyone who participated. Hope that you're having some fun this evening, because Gordon and I sure are. I'm going to throw it to Gordon so he can go continue with the next four questions. KY6V from Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Let's see if you can stump these guys.
I don't know. They're pretty sharp tonight, Kathy. Thank you. KY6V here. You know, I'm sitting back thinking that maybe we ought to have a program some evening, try to stump the teacher. And, of course, that is your profession. Let me ask you this before I go into my question. What document was known that read, for starters, Now is a time for all good men to come to the aid of their country. Kathy, over.
Well, Gordon, I'm going to stand the fifth here because you're probably stumped the teacher with this one. How about this one for you? What is the document that starts out 84 years ago?
I wasn't around when that was written. You know, I don't know the answer of this now is the time, but I learned it when I was a kid. And it's something, Kathy, that I use all the time when I'm trying to check out my proficiency of typing. You know, if I can type in very short order that whole saying, I know that I've still got it, and I don't use an HP system, so, you know, Hunt and Beck. So I really don't know. Okay, you want me to continue with the questions, or do you want to belabor what we're talking about? Over.
Well, Gordon, actually, I Googled it here, and it says, this is funny, this phrase, now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country, is often used as a typing drill, just what you've been using. But Mr. Gary is in the text, but he says he has a comment, so maybe he has something different he would like to share. But I think that's something to do with the typewriter and starting early with the typewriting, and it's a drill. But maybe he has something else he'd like to share.
Well, thanks, Kathy. Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say. It was a typing drill invented by a teacher named Charles E. Weller. And incidentally, many typing books now use the variant, now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country. It was originally, now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their party. They used the aid of their country because it exactly fills a 70-space line if you put a period at the end. And they can all type better than I can. KC2RMO, back to net.
All right, I'll pick it up, Kathy. Thanks, Gary. You know, I've been using that for years as a typing-type thing, and I thought this was sort of genuine. You know, where did it come from, and didn't know. So now we know the answer to that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is South Cars, and we're talking about trivia tonight. We're at about 57 minutes into the first hour, and I have the next four questions for you with your permission. And the first of those four reads, who said, I'm the President of the United States, and I'm not going to eat any more broccoli? Let me read that again. Who said, I'm the President of the United States, and I'm not going to eat any more broccoli? Any takers, please call now.
Victor Hotel.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I can tell your party affiliation already. Steve, stand by. Anybody else, please?
RMO.
All right, we've got Victor Hotel and RMO. Anybody else, please? All right, stand tall there. Gary will be with you in a moment. Mr. Louisiana, go ahead, sir.
That can be attributed to George Herbert Walker Bush, 41st President of the United States, KF5VH.
Well, that's great. And Gary, I don't want to plunder your answer here, but, you know, Steve is absolutely correct. How did you know that? Did you Google it, or did you just know it, Steve? Over.
I think you have the party affiliation correct.
I won't go there from here. RMO, you're up, sir. Over.
I think there's another party involved on this end. But yeah, it was the decider's dad is what it was, and we'll agree with Steve on that one. It's KC2RMO, back to the net.
All right, guys, just great. Thank you. All right, the next question for the evening, ladies and gentlemen. What 20th century conflict was dubbed the Forgotten War, despite 54,246 U.S. deaths? I'll read that one again. What 20th century conflict was dubbed the Forgotten War, despite 54,246 U.S. deaths? Any answers, please? Over.
Vietnam, WH2AAT. Finally got this thing to work. Working with a new Galaxy Tab 4. RNT, finally.
Hi, Gaylord. Nice to have you aboard with us, sir. All right, Gaylord's coming in with the Vietnam conflict. Any other answers, please? Over.
RMO?
Victor Hotel.
Okay. Let me get my notes going here. We've got AAT, RMO, Victor Hotel. Anybody else?
Victor X-Ray Papa.
VUN.
All right. Let me read my total here. I've got ATT. I've got RMO, VR, Victor Hotel, VXP, VUN. Let's take this group to start with. We've already got your answer. Any other comments on that, Gaylord? And I'll pass it on to the other guys. Over.
Well, I've been trying to get this microphone to come up. I haven't had this new tablet more than, let's see, 8 o'clock now. About 3 hours I've had this thing in my possession. And I don't know if you've been watching the deal, but it's Samsung user. I got rid of that finally. Got Gaylord on there. I've just been pulling my hair out trying to get this thing to work. I lost my Samsung Galaxy Tab 2 a month ago, and I couldn't stand it any longer. So I guess we got this thing working. And I still stick with Vietnam. Back to you, Gordon. WH2AAT. I wonder how my audio is.
Sounding good, Gaylord, and looking good. Looking at your audio graph, you've got it right where you need it, sir. So don't change anything. Okay, we've got you down for Vietnam. RMO, Mr. Syracuse. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. Vietnam certainly wasn't forgotten by those who got that little notice in the mail. I certainly remember it. I believe the Forgotten War was the Korean War. It was really, you know, you're coming off of World War II. You have this kind of an undeclared type of a war situation, it was obviously, you know, big for the folks at the time, but I think everybody kind of wanted to forget about it too. You know, it wasn't really a U.S. war, it was a U.N. war, and I think they just kind of wanted to forget about it. So I'm going to go with the Korean War. It's KC2RMO back to net.
All right, thank you very much, Gary. We've got you recorded as Vietnam also. Two Vietnams going so far. Victor Hotel, Mr. Louisiana. Go ahead, sir.
Well, probably people under 35, if they, and Gary did say Korea. People under 35, if they haven't seen a rerun of MASH, they probably don't know anything about the Korean War. So I'll say the Korean War, KF5VH.
Yeah, thanks for that correction. I've changed Gary to Korean. I guess I had Vietnam on my mind. We got VH coming in with Korean. How about you, Mr. Ohio? Rick, go ahead.
Oh, put me down also for Korea. I remember my dad used to say, that wasn't a war, that was a conflict. How dare they call it a war? So that's how I remembered it. He said they wanted to forget it and never remember it at all. N1 3XP.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Rick. We've got you down for Korean. Victor United in November. Mr. Washington State, go ahead, James. Over.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Korean also, and it was a police action, I believe, is how they put it out in the press.
All right, we've got you for Korean also. Anybody else want to take a stab at this before we finalize it? Over.
Why is it R?
Bernie, how say you, sir? Over.
Yep, I had two of them in mind, too, in the Korean War is the one I kept saying. I think it was before, when I was younger. So I kept thinking Korean War there, too. But I had two of them in my mind. That's what I'll say, too. And I hope my audio level is okay the way it is, KC9YZR.
Yeah, the audio's fine, Bernie. All right, we've got you down for Korean also. I heard today that you're a tall drink of water, 6'3". Did you play basketball or football, or what'd you do, sir? Over.
Well, I had basketball in high school, but in Phi Ed, with physical education, but I never went out, you know, for a team or anything other than in school. I don't know. Back then, I was more interested in something they call bowling. For some reason, I was thinking of bowling there. The first game was 87, and the second game was 84. But then after that, it went up and up and up. And pretty soon, my average was 136, 145, 169. And I kept hitting these 199s, 199. I could not break 200. 199. And I thought to myself, if I could get a 225 average on a steady basis, I would try for the Pro Bowlers Tour and actually earn some money at it. But I could not break 200. I kept hitting 199, anywhere from 145 to 199, and I just could not break 200. So I decided not to try. I guess, I don't know, if you could even get on the Pro Bowlers Tour with that kind of an average. But the more I went, you know, once a week or something like that, the better it is. If you go twice or three times a week, you get better and better, just like playing pool. But nope, I never really was that interested in actually playing basketball for a living or anything like that. So back to the net, KC9YZR.
Well, that's great, Bernie. KY6V here for South Cars. One of my closest friends that I grew up with was best man at his wedding, was 6'4". About four axe handles wide, across the shoulders. A great guy to have on your side when you were in a bar fight. But he didn't play ball either. Thank you, Bernie. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the answer is Korea. I'm sorry, Gaylord. I am a Korean veteran. I was never on the turf. The closest I got was from your home island, Gaylord, on Guam. We did an awful lot of naval communication. I was up at the Comstay there on Guam. An awful lot of communication in the Pacific Fleet regarding that skirmish. I am a Korean veteran and have used some of those facilities through the years. But Korean is the correct answer. Okay, let's see where we're going here. We are now 10 minutes into the second hour. Now this is an interesting one that's coming up, guys and gals. What room in the average American home is the scene of the greatest number of arguments? Now, sit back and think about this one. What room in the average American home is the scene of the greatest number of arguments? And I bet we'll have some fun with this. Any answers, please? Call now.
RMO?
No, it's not the basement, Gary. RMO recognized. Anybody else?
Sierra United November.
Victor Hotel.
Yankee Zulu Romeo.
Alright, nice parley, guys and gals. RMOSUNVH and YZR. Anybody else?
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Okay, got you, Rick. VXP will run this group. You know, we don't have basements down here in Florida, Gary. RMO, go ahead, over.
Well, this is hard for me because Steph and I never have arguments. Never. And so I'm just going to have to figure out what the rest of the people do. My guess, I'm just kind of trying to logically work this, but I'm going to say the kitchen. You know, you maybe somebody's in the kitchen cooking and the other person comes in and some sort of conflict starts then, at the end of the day. I don't know. It just seemed to me kitchen would be the logical place to start an argument. The problem with that, of course, is that there are a lot of sharp objects and heavy objects there, too. So, you know, you've got knives and frying pans, and it's just not a good mix. So, but I'm still going to stick with kitchen. KC2RMO, back to the net.
Sometime when time permits, I got to tell you about the bathroom shower. Thank you. Kitchen is the designation out of RMO. SUN, was that next, over?
Yes, I think I'm next. Actually, kitchen would be a nice answer, but I don't think that's where we've had. But we've only been married for a month, so I don't think we've had any conflicts. But we did have previously, and those have happened in the computer room. And the garage is right now with all these stupid boxes getting packed. But I would say the computer room, when that computer has a problem and I don't want any help with it, remember? And you offer help and I get frustrated. And it's not quite an argument, it's sort of walking away type thing. Kitchen knives, frying pans, and a lot of things to throw out there. I'm not sure about the kitchen, but that may be the correct answer. Back to you, Gordon.
I'm not sure what's put down here, the computer room, the kitchen, or the garage, but we'll take it one at a time. You know, Kathy, you're probably going to beat me until I'm not with it anymore here tonight after this session, but gals and guys, she is dangerous with a kitchen knife. When she goes to cut a chicken or something else with a board or without a board, I said, be careful, you're going to lose your fingers. And she gets a little upset with me about that. And that's in the kitchen. I'll leave it at that. Victor Hotel, Mr. Louisiana, go ahead.
Thank you, Gordon. After serious consideration, I believe I have the correct answer. The room where most fights occur are the rooms where the bills are paid. I don't know exactly how you're going to put that down, but wherever the bills are paid, that's where the fights are going to be. KF5VH.
Now, that's interesting. I don't know how to put that into the equation here. But I'll put it down where the bills are paid. Normally, in our household, it's the computer area as opposed to any other room in the house. All right. Thanks, Steve. YZR, Bernie, how say you, sir? Over.
Okay, Gordon, I'll try to take a little pause there in case anything needs resetting, so repeaters or what have you. I was only thinking about the past and experiences and stuff like that, not my own experiences, but like my mother's and so on. And as far as the bill paying in the 70s, that was before we had computers, at home, it was in what they called a den, a D-E-N, or a little den that was in between the living room and the kitchen there, or behind the living room. But I, basing it on my father and mother's, when they were still living together before his mom divorced him. He wasn't really fighting exactly or arguing anything like that. It was more of gripes or complaints. But it was the kitchen. And usually it turned out, well, that's not the way my mother made it. He was always comparing my mother's cooking to his mother's cooking. And so I'm going to say kitchen. But and a second husband, well, that was in the den, which was next to the kitchen. And then beyond that was the hallway going leading to the bedrooms and bathroom, and then also to the living room. But, so anyway, I'm gonna say kitchen. KC9YZR.
All right, thanks, Bernie. All right, we got kitchen down for Bernie. VXP, you want to wind this one up? Over.
N1VXP. You know, I don't hear anybody say about this one. What about the bedroom? Tend to discuss what's going on and somehow get into an argument, and next thing you know, the husband has got to sleep on the couch. I wonder. Actually, I would say, from my experience of family, my mother would come in with groceries and ask any of us that are sitting around watching TV, does anyone want to help me put the groceries away? And first thing my father would say is, all right, boys, go help her out. He would never go and do anything. And she said one day, I wish somebody else would do the work and not sit around. And that almost started an argument in the living room, but my father knew better than to say anything. So I would say definitely the kitchen, but that could lead to the bedroom by the end of the evening, which means somebody would have to sleep on the couch if it got too heated. N1GXP, back to that.
Hey, great comments. Thanks, Rick, and thanks, everybody. Well, the official answer that we have for this trivia question is the kitchen. But I take that with a grain of salt. You know, it can happen all over the house. As far as the bedroom is concerned, I learned many, many years ago, Rick, if there's a conflict, make sure you kiss her goodnight. Or you'll be real trouble in the morning. All right, I've got one more question, and I'm going to turn it over to Kathy. Guys and gals, but the answer was the kitchen on the last question. How much time in months does the average American motorist spend during the lifetime waiting for red lights to turn green? I'll read that again. How much time in months does the average American motorist spend during the lifetime waiting for red lights to turn to green? Now, scratch on this one and answers, please. KY6V for Southcars.
RMO, I'm going to take a guess.
Thanks, Gary. RMO recognized. Anybody else?
VH.
Mr. Louisiana Victor Hotel. Anybody else? Okay, we're going to take them in a parley of two. Mr. Syracuse, go ahead, sir.
Well, if it's in Syracuse, it's probably your entire lifetime. This city has had a traditional problem with the timing of the traffic light, especially downtown. This is a total guess, but I'm going to say, you know, over the lifetime of an average driver, probably maybe 5 years. I'm going to say 5 years, whatever that, you know, 60 months. So it makes sense. I don't know. It's just, you know, if you figure a traffic light takes about, you know, a minute to change or so, you know, that would all add up. And if you figure you drive for, you know, 30 or 40 years, you know, somewhere around there. That would add up to about 5 years. It's a nice round number anyway, so I'll just throw it in there, 5 years. KC2RMO, back to the net.
All right. Thanks, Gary. RMO's coming in with 5 years on the question. And I thank you for that, sir. Victor Hotel. Steve, go ahead, sir.
Well, for every big city, there's 100 Hootervilles out there that don't even have a traffic light. So let me say 9 months, KF5VH.
Okay. Steve is coming in with 9 months. Gary came in with 5 years. Anybody else, please, before we wind this one up?
Victor Holta. Victor X-Ray Papa.
I wonder how you got an H in there. Go ahead, Rick.
I remember all a while back there was a discussion here in town about putting more right turn on red signs up, and I remember something about 2 to 3 years in a lifetime would be roughly about the amount of time waiting at lights. And they did decide to change some of the intersections to make that time less. And 1PXB back to net control.
All right. Thank you for that, Rick. KY6V here for South Cars. We've got you coming in at 2 to 3 years. We've got RMO at 5, and we've got Victor Hotel at about 9 months. And the answer that I have here that was researched, maybe needs to be researched again, is 6 months. I'll read that question again. How much time in months does the average American motorist spend during his lifetime waiting for red lights to turn to green? And the answer that I have on the script here is 6 months. So be that what it may. Thanks for the contribution. Kathy, I'm going to turn it over to you. I see that we're 25 minutes into the second hour. You're up for the next four. We may be considering closing this down after yours at your discretion. KY6V, over.
All right, thank you, Gordon. And maybe we could change our questions and actually go into some ham jargon. You know, some of those may actually have fun doing that. We'll go away from some of the questions because my next ones are not multiple choice. It's actually guessing. But let me tell you about the stoplights and the red lights waiting for green. On my way to work, as you well know, from Vero to Fort Pierce, I always get stopped for those red lights, and I have to wait for them green. So I couldn't do it in 6 months, but, you know, when I could say almost always I'm waiting for a green light. So what do you say about that, Gordon? We're actually going to do some ham jargon. You know, it actually begins, I believe, on page 8 of what I gave you. Maybe we can just do some of that, and some of this is very simple, but some of it, it's rather new. What do you think about that, Gordon?
Okay, I have just fast-forwarded on the script here to page 8. What number would you be starting with, ma'am? Over.
Well, actually, there is no numbers. It's just the word itself. Page 8, I'll start right at the very top. My first question is going to be what 73 means. Are we okay at that point? And then I'll just go from that point on. Gordon, what do you think?
Okay, the numbers fool me. I'm with you. Go right ahead, Kathy. KY6V.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Gordon and I have been having a lot of fun with the trivia, whether it be history or just general, and we have a lot more we could go through. Some of it is multiple choice. Some of it's actually just coming up with the answer, but we're starting to have to wind down this evening so that everyone can enjoy their evening and prepare for Mother's Day tomorrow. So we want to do some ham jargon for you. Some of this is quite easy for you. And you'll know the answers. But all I'm going to pretty much throw out there is in ham radio, what that word is, and I'm asking for anyone to come aboard with their choice of answer. So my first one is 73. What does that mean? Anybody want to check in and take a stab at that?
RMO.
All right, I have Mr. RMO, and this is a very simple question and answer. You say it all the time. I'm just looking for someone to tell me what it means. So, do I have anyone else that would like to join Mr. Gary at this point? Guess not, Gary. I think that was just a too easy of a one. Tell me, what does 73 mean to you?
Well, thanks, Kath. We all use it. Sometimes we use the plural when it should be singular, though, when we talk about how we use it. But 73 means best wishes, best regards. And we kind of work that into sentences sometimes, and it comes out multiple instead of singular, but the thought's still there. So 73, best wishes. And back to the net, this is KC2RMO.
All right, thank you so much, Gary. And that was such an easy one, and no one wanted to take a stab at it but you. But you know, I always listen to Slav when he's talking to myself and to ladies. He usually says 73 and 88. So my next one's going to be 88. What does that mean to anyone out there? And hopefully I can get some more check-ins at this point. This is way, way too easy for you guys, and you're not wanting to come aboard. So tell me, what does 88 mean?
Well, I'll hop in there again. KC2RMO.
VH.
I think these are just way too easy for you guys, and you just don't want to take a stab at it. I have RMO and I have VH. Anyone else want to tell me what 88 means? You know, maybe I have no clue and I'm looking for an answer. Anybody else want to join the two we have at this point?
Yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah, put down WH2AHA. I want to comment about 88.
All right, I have RMO, I have Victor Hotel, and I have Wait a Minute, who is OVI, and I have you, Gaylord AAT. Let's work with these stations we have. RMO, tell me, what does 88 mean to you, or maybe to me?
Well, Kath, it was an absolutely awesome Oldsmobile from the late 40s all the way up to the early 60s. Awesome car, great engine. But in ham speak, however, 88 is hugs and kisses, and you gotta watch how you use that. You know, you get in trouble. It's KC2RMO. Back to the net.
All right, Gary, thank you so much for that. And that is a comment that, like I said, Slav always says. He says 73 and 88 whenever I check in with him. And, you know, actually when I first got my ticket and I didn't know too much of the ham jargon, you know, I wondered what he was saying. And I always check that out. But I'll keep you in mind. Let's see what other people have to say. Victor Hotel. Besides the 88 Oldsmobile and maybe 1988, what would you like to share with us about the jargon 88?
I concur. Hugs and kisses. KF5VH.
All right. Thank you so much, Steve. Okay, how about you, Mr. OVI? I think you said wait a minute, but what would you like to share with us this evening?
Well, I'm here, Katie Philosophy of Virginia, in person, on a 24-inch color TV. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, let me read it. My magnolias are starting to bloom. They haven't yet, but they're starting. Now, that is a good 88 for me, when they start blooming. So I'm going to say, Happy Valentine's, Katie Philosophy of Virginia.
Well, Pete, I think you're probably way too late for Happy Valentine's. But today, tomorrow is Happy Mother's Day. But thanks for coming aboard, and thanks for sharing with us about your, I think you said, your TV. So hopefully you'll enjoy the end of our program this evening. But, Six Victor, how about you coming aboard before I call on Gaylord?
Well, thanks, Kathy. KY6V here. I just wanted to make a comment when you were talking about 73s, you know, prior to the 88. Or 88s. Somebody put in the text box, and I thought it was so gorgeous, it just absolutely tore me apart with laughter. He says that's three less, 73 is three less in the trombones. Now, if you all caught that one, 76 trombones led the big parade with 106 clarinets behind. That was gorgeous, Kathy. KY6V, over.
Well, Gordon, that was actually Victor Hotel, and he's got quite a humor, and I never even thought of that. And he's got some comments. He comes in the text box, so hopefully you're following those. But I didn't even think about it. I was trying to think what he was talking about. Minus three trombones. So thanks for sharing that with me. So, AAT, what would you like to share with us about 88, maybe 73 versus 88? And thanks for being here, Gaylord, tonight, and I hope that you're enjoying.
Yes, Kathy and the gang. I was about to pull my hair out at the very beginning with this tablet. I was on echo test, and I hit transmit. I got the microphone up, like on the tab 2. I spoke. I was able to get it in settings and adjust. But I couldn't get this blasted thing to type whatsoever. Finally, somebody started to type. But anyway, the answer to the question, I always, over on Guam, I'd always tell the wife, 73 and 88. Hugs and kisses what I thought 88s were. Go ahead.
Actually, everyone, that is correct. A 73 is best regards, and 88 is hugs in it, and what I have is and or kisses. And so those were easy things for you to answer. You've heard that often on the nets. So those were some easy answers. I have a couple more before I throw it to Gordon, and he can decide where we go from there. But my next one is barefoot. I actually like to go to barefoot all the time. Don't wear closed shoes like the sandals, but I do like walking around barefoot. When I was young, I liked it so much. I ran through some woods, and I cut up my feet so badly. But let's see what it is in ham radio. Barefoot, what does it mean? So with that, I'll throw it out to anyone who would like to come aboard. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, along with KY6V in our trivia night. So does anyone want to take a stab at barefoot for me?
RMO.
VXP.
6, Victor.
All right, I have 3 at this point. I have RMO, Victor X-Ray Papa, and 6 Victor. So you guys will have to tell me if it has anything to do with how I was running through the woods, being barefoot, and getting my feet all cut up. Before I call on Gary, is there anyone else who would like to be added to this list?
Did I get in there, Kathy? Gaylord?
All right, I got you, Gaylord, and I have you, OVI. So let me start at the very top and pick up our backup this evening, Gary, KC2RMO. I'm almost afraid to what he's going to tell me about barefoot, but let's see what he can tell me about barefoot and ham radio jargon.
Well, thanks, Kath. It's like this. You can operate without shoes, but if you're using an amplifier, you can't operate barefoot. So operating barefoot is not using an amplifier. You're just taking the output from your transceiver and feeding it to the antenna. You're not boosting that power in any way. KC2RMO, back to the net.
All right, Gary, thanks for sharing that. See, it's running. Just like I said, I was running through the woods barefoot, so it's just not the same, but it's running without an amplifier. Okay, we'll see if that's the correct answer. VXP, is that the same thing you'd like to share, or do you have something else, something different that you have for an answer for barefoot?
I think Gary explained it quite well. And once VXP, I agree with Gary.
All right. I'll put you down as agreeing. And you, Rick, and Gary, and anyone else who I have on my list, tell me, have you ever run through the woods barefoot and had anything happen to you like I happened to me? I don't run barefoot anymore out in the woods, but I do in the home. Six Victor, what would you like to share with us this evening?
Well, this has turned very interesting, Kathy. Thank you, KY6V here. You know, I'm an island boy. Gaylord spent a lot of time out there on Guam, and I spent some time out there. But I was raised in the Hawaiian Islands, and I run around the house all the time, totally barefooted, and that's the way I prefer. You know, I only put on a pair of shoes when I have to be civilized and go into town for something. But Gary's comment is absolutely correct. When you get to the ham jargon, it simply means you have your shoes on or your shoes off. If your shoes off, you're using your normal transceiver at its capability, and that's normally about 100 watts. If you have your shoes on, you have an amplifier that could be taking you to 500, 800, or 1500 watts. It doesn't answer your question about running through the forest or the trees. My mother grew up, Kathy, and I think you've heard this story, on the volcano out there in the Hawaiian Islands. There were 10 in the family, 2 boys and 8 girls. And she had probably a quarter or so of callus on the bottom of her feet. She could walk across hot lava. She could walk across broken glass. And she had that until she passed as a silent key at the age of about 86. So I don't know if that answers you, but the question ham-wise is an amplifier. Over.
Well, thank you for sharing both answers. And I've heard the story many times. I'm not sure if I have the calluses on the bottom of my feet, but you've seen how many shoes I have. We've been packing them. I don't wear many of them, but they are there. And, you know, two boxes, big boxes of shoes that I don't wear. But I, along with you, like to go barefoot. But I know it doesn't, it's not the meaning for ham radio, but I wanted to share that with everyone. Well, thank you, Mr. Gordon. Let me pick up AAT Gaylord and see what he'd like to share with us about barefoot, if he has anything additional he'd like to share, or he agrees with what everyone has said thus far.
Well, Kathy and the gang, I agree with the ham jargon. No amplifier turned on, just choosing what the radio puts out, maximum 100 watts mostly. Although now they come out with the Kenwood 480HX, I guess, and that's capable of 200 watts. I just came back this afternoon before going down to Best Buy to buy this tablet. I attended a QRP meeting. That is milliwatts up to Grandi 10 watts is considered to be QRP. And I have checked into South Cars 40 meter net, 7251, when I first got this Alpha Delta DXCC antenna up in the air. It's John N4JY sent me years ago, nine in fact, before I got around to open a box up. He convinced me I'd get that antenna out and in the air. And I started to go QRP or mobile, and hey, it was working. They gave me an excellent signal report, S9, several mornings in go. And then I got brave. I just stayed at HF power output, zero, and I guess I must have timed it several times just right. I got in there with everybody else, some say the big boys, using HF power out, dialed down to zero. So I'm leaving that antenna alone. Better buy another nickel here. And as far as barefooting physically, when I was a youngster, we lived in on a farm up in Iowa. The road out front was gravel. And it seemed like after the spring thaw, the county would put fresh gravel on the road. And that's where I started to get my feet up, calloused up pretty good. When I could lickety-split run down the road and everything. Then it came hay season. Dad had a big old alfalfa field out there. He would go out there with a sickle deal and cut that stuff, and then the rake. And I'll tell you, those alfalfa stubbles, they were a lot sharper than that blasted gravel road, I'll tell you. But, hey, it wasn't too long. I could probably run across, like Gordon said, some broken glass. I don't know about the hot lava, but I've seen that done too, but I don't know if I'd want to attempt that. But the broken glass, I could probably handle that too. Back to the gang there, KC6SUN, WH2AAT. I've had my say.
Well, Gaither, thanks so much for sharing that. You know, I actually tried that in the state of Michigan, walking across gravel. It wasn't too nice. You know, I do it outside in the grass and on the driveway, but don't have any gravel, so don't want to try that. I have one other person that wants to tell me about barefoot. Then I'm going to throw it to you, Gordon, and see what you want to do. We probably should close it this evening, but it's been a lot of fun. The final question I had was about a boat anchor, but I know it's probably time to close this evening. But, OVI, what would you like to share with us?
And this is Chief Oscar McKinley. Let me tell you something. You will not go, but I was in Reading, Pennsylvania, on one hot summer day. It was 114 degrees outside. Now, fathom this. You have a pair of shoes on, and you're walking across the street. And they used the old asphalt at that time. You would not want to be caught barefooted with your shoes off and running across that road with that tar being so hot that it was almost like liquefied. It was like walking on water. You would not want to be barefooted. But anyway, get rid of barefooted stuff. Barefooted stuff, I heard that on the TV radio when I first got interested in radio. That's why I heard that term first. I still wonder, why in the world would you want to run different? But, now these guys are already something. These guys put on these 15,000 watt transistors on TV. And I tell you, it really rings your ears. So you need to run barefoot on CB. Understatement. Katie Frost, you reach the India. Have a good evening. Best of goodbyes and toodaloo.
All right. Thank you so much, Pete. And I will tell you, asphalt. I've done that many times, and I get halfway across, and I say, oh, why have I done this? But I continue. Don't have too much asphalt down here, but sure did up in the state of Michigan. Before I come across with the correct answer, which absolutely all of you have been correct, Rick has a comment, so let me throw it to his direction and see what he'd like to share with us.
Sun 1VXP, I agree with Pete that sprayed on asphalt on the gravel. I used to go to New Jersey on the shoreline, and beginning of the summer, it wasn't too bad. But on those really hot days, we only had to walk maybe, about 50 yards from the house to the shore, or to the beach. But it was on a blacktop road that was pretty well worn down, just had the tar, a little bit of gravel. And we were always warned about, they just put new tar down this year. Try to stay on the side. Well, I didn't pay attention. I got home. The bottoms of my feet were all full of tar. And every so often I would maybe make a little bit of a cut or, a little bit of sore. But I knew right away, the only way to get that off, and it was painful, was nothing more than kerosene to remove the tar, and that would be into the little wound, and it would hurt. So it taught me a quick lesson: don't walk on the hot tar in the shoreline barefoot. That was one lesson I learned once. I said never again. And once the XP back to net control.
Well, thank you everyone for sharing that this evening about barefoot. We really went away from ham jargon with some of the comments, but it was a lot of fun. Now, Gordon, I'm going to throw it your direction to see if you can get any final check-ins. I see George has been in the text box, so maybe he'd like to make a comment. And I think we should close for this evening. It's been a grand net. I've enjoyed being your co-host, as always, and I've enjoyed what we've accomplished this evening. It's been a great deal of fun. But I'm going to throw it your direction and see where you want to go from here. KY6B from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Gordon here, KY6B for South Cars. I see that we're about 53 minutes into the second hour. I've got just a whole bunch of questions, and I know you do too, that we could keep this going, but I would suspect that what we ought to consider is just picking this up for another session downstream someplace. I didn't see George in the text box. I guess I missed it. LCB, Mr. T, are you there? Would you like to say anything for the good of the order this evening, sir? Over.
Well, good evening, Gordon, and the group, and KW4, and my Charlie Bravo. What can I say? I'm here physically. I don't know too much about mentally, but just to add the barefoot in there. I was born without shoes, and hopefully I go out without shoes, and what can I say, ain't no better place to be raised, but on Coral Rock. I did the glass thing, and I did the high stepping on the hard asphalt, where it, once you set your feet down, you can feel that old tar kind of slide up under your feet there and kind of make you high step it a little bit there. But ain't no better thing if I think a man be wearing shoes, he'd be born with shoes. So I'm going barefooted just as long as I can. But when I got to deal with society, you know how it is. They make you want to wear shoes, but I kind of go around that and wear sandals. KW4, Charlie Bravo.
I hear you, George. Isn't that precious? Well, I haven't got to that point yet. I put on city shoes when I go to the city and run around on the hot tar when I'm at home. Anyway. Thanks for being with us. Hope everything's going okay. Are you still all right for next weekend, George? And would you be coming in on Friday night or Saturday morning? Over.
I'll be there when you get ready to start doing your hickey garden, if you'd be so kind to send me some driving direction there so we can kind of get it together there. But I plan to be there at the crack of dawn.
Okay. I'll do it, George, on the driving instructions. Jack will be with us, and he's an early riser. If we can get an early start, we're going to be doing pretty good, George. Over.
Well, buddy, that sounds good to me. Wouldn't mind enjoying the sunrise, in that area. So, like I said, I'll come knock, and when you start. Stop a rock in there, so you name the time and I'll be there. KW4, Charlie Bravo, back to KY6 Victor.
Alright, thanks, George. I'll get some email going, we'll get this all coordinated. Guys and gals, what we're talking about is Kathy and I are moving here in Maine, stay Saturday the 17th. George is coming down from Orange City. Jack is coming up from Fort Pierce to help us muscle the stuff into the truck and get the major move taken care of. So, sounds good, George, and I'll be back with you, and we'll work out the details. Okay, Kathy, as I said, I've got, a whole number more trivia that we can use, but we are at 58 minutes into the second hour. So rather than opening it up for the group, may I suggest that I turn it back to you and let you make any announcements that you feel are necessary, particularly that we'll be discussing Mother's Day tomorrow on the Rag Chew. Any comments you want to make on the change of scheduling of Global or RagChew, or I can do that if you like, and we'll close it up for this evening. K6SUN from KY6V.
All right, I most definitely will do that, and I want to thank everyone for being here tonight. It was a lot of fun. We will throw it out there one final time for any check-ins that want to come aboard, but let me tell you about our schedule. And Gordon, I would like you to talk about our new schedule. Most of them who's listening tonight received that in the mass mailing, but there is a change, everyone, starting in June. And I'm going to have Gordon talk about this, but there will be a change with Global and RagChew. But, we've enjoyed you being here tonight. Tomorrow morning, a Sunday morning RagChew, will be about Mother's Day. NXI, WA1NXI from Maine, will be the NCS. I will be his backup. Gordon and I have some packing to do and some travels to do later in the day, but we'll be here in the morning. So I'm going to throw it out there, see if we have any final check-ins. Then, Gordon, I'm going to throw it to you for you to talk about our new schedule, and then you can throw it back to me, and I'll close this evening's session if that's okay. So do we have anybody else who would like to come aboard, either talk about our trivia session or anything you'd like to talk about, or maybe you just want to check in this evening? So at this point, I'm going to throw it out there to our general audience to see if we have any final check-ins.
WH2AAT.
N3JAH, Neil here in Valley Forge, King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and I just want to check in, and I listened into some of the chat, and very interesting. N3JAH, and I'll turn it over to Net Control.
And Victor XA Papa.
All right. Thank you so much, gentlemen, and welcome, Neil. I'm not sure if you're a South Coast member, if we've ever talked before, but we appreciate you being here this evening, and hopefully you've enjoyed this session we've had this evening. So let me call on you, AAT, Mr. Gaylord. What is your final comments for this evening?
Well, Kathy, last time I got in here with the gang, Gary, KC4RMO, was not present. And Gordon, KY6V, told me that he was going to go solar. He may have some questions. If anybody would be interested in seeing how my 6.24 kW system is working, it consists of 24 260-watt panels. The meter's been going backwards ever since. So even right now, it's dark out. I'm using what the sun produced several days ago, or maybe even today. But I'll be able to sell, I don't know how much yet, because I haven't had it on that long, but I'll be able to sell back to the Clay Electric Co-op any excess about the second week of each January of the year. How much that's going to be, I'm not sure, but I'm loving it. Sunday through yesterday is producing 33 1/3 kilowatts of electricity. I don't use near that much, but anybody wants to see this system, email me. I'll take your email, and I'll email you really two emails. The first one will be explaining, once I send you the link and you click on View System, what to do when you get that, because it's going to ask for my email address and my password. And once you type those in the appropriate places, click on Sign In. My initial email will tell you, hey, now you can do this and this and this, and I'll be available at a later date to answer any other questions there. I'm also on Skype quite regularly. My Skype name is WH2AAT at 123. And back to you, Kathy and Gordon. Great net tonight. I may be getting in here more often now I know how this tablet's working. 73 and 88 to you there, Kathy. Maybe that's not appropriate. Gordon, don't hit me over the head now.
That's funny, Gaylord. I'm sure he won't hit you over the head. Most of you know me by Kathy, you know, so no worries. But thanks for sharing that with us, and I think I've heard from Gary that he's gotten solar. I remember years back I had that as well. Very useful. Thanks for being here tonight, Gaylord, and I'm glad you enjoyed tonight, and hopefully you'll join us in the morning if your time and availability is there. I know it's Mother's Day, and I want to wish everyone who's out there a happy Mother's Day, and to the wives as well. But let me break with you, Gaylord, and let me pick up Neil, N3JAH, Neil. First time I think we've talked. We appreciate you being here tonight. And I do want to send you an email, so when you come aboard, just tell me that your email is right, is accurate on QRZ, so I can send you some information about South Cars, because we always like to send that information to new people who have connected. And we hope that you've enjoyed the program this evening. So, Neil, N3JAH, would you like to come aboard and say hi to South Cars?
I certainly would, Kathy. Thank you very much. This is N3JAH here. I'm kind of new to EchoLink, and kind of like it. And I did join OneNet. Let's see if I can remember. Have a little recall here. With I think it's KD6HLQ. it's the anthem net, and we're establishing a 40-meter link in addition to going on EchoLink. And Kathy, I did enjoy tonight's session and listening to Gordon and Pete and yourself, and it's kind of exciting. And it's voice over IP. I'm not sure how many links it's taking to get me to you. But again, thank you very much for letting me sit in. This is N3JAH, and I'll turn it back to you, Kathy, Net Control.
Well, once again, thank you so much, Neil, for joining us this evening. My name is Kathy, Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm actually the net manager for this VOIP session. And, you know, I always send welcome emails, like I said, out to new people who have connected. And we ask you to join our organization, and there's no charge. It's just absolutely free. But we usually will send out a mass mailing so that you know what's going on. And I will do that tomorrow because I have your email address on QRZ, if that's accurate. So we're glad that you enjoyed it. We do have two organizations with South Cars. One is the HF side and one is the VYP side. And you're sounding great through Delco Doug, but you can connect to us directly by simply going to Star Scars Star, and that will bring you directly into us. So one final question for you, Neil. Is your email accurate on QRZ?
Yes, Kathy. It should be Comcast, Foliani1 at Comcast.net. Of course, Foliani, being Mediterranean Irish, that's the politically correct term. I kid around with a lot of friends of mine. You know, my parents are from the old country. But anyway, I really enjoyed your net, and you do very well in handling the net. And I'm glad I'm coming through. I had a little problem adjusting the volume to the mic and on the earphones, but it seems like everything is coming in fine, and everybody's been crystal clear on this end. And thank you for giving me the the quality of my sound. Thank you, and we'll turn it back to you. This is N3JAH, turning it to Net Control, Kathy. Go ahead.
Well, thank you once again, Neil, for joining us, and hopefully you'll join us in the future. I will send that email out to you sometime tomorrow when time permits, so you know how to connect, and I will send that invite as well out to you to join us. And it's just a very simple process, and like I told you, it's free. We just simply ask for a month and day of your birth so we can say happy birthday to you. So I'll send that out to you tomorrow to give you some information about South Cars, and I'll leave that decision up to you. But thank you for being here, and I'm glad that you enjoyed the session tonight. You know, I see another new station in which I haven't seen before out there. VE, and I think he's gone now, VE1KLR, his name was Martin, and he was from Canada, but I see he's gone. So VXP, come aboard and make your final comments for this evening.
This is N1VXP. I definitely agree. Another trivia night would be quite a little bit of fun, and maybe all of us should come up with different topics, or maybe you should stick with one topic and see if other people could maybe suggest some trivia questions. Might get more people involved and have a lot of fun. Other than that, I did notice in the news, that's how I bring it to attention, especially to like Gary, Lee Marshall, I think I marked it down, 64, voice of Tony the Tiger, had just passed away. Quite surprising. I do remember, I always kept thinking he was, Tony the Tiger was a lot older than back in 1969, but apparently not. I kept thinking it was earlier. But, quite surprising to hear somebody like that had passed away, and I think it was esophagus cancer, which really shocked me, because I had a cousin of mine had the same cancer, but he's actually in remission of it and had no problems. And 1-3-XP back to net control.
Well, Rick, thanks for being here tonight. Thanks for sharing that about Tony the Tiger. I wasn't aware of that. So, and I think Gary has something in the text box as well. But thank you for sharing that with us. I want to thank everyone for being here this evening. I also do see another call sign very unfamiliar to me. His name is Mark. He's in Tennessee. KD4TFH. And Mark, I put in the text box just simply asking for your email address, if you have one, so I can send you that welcome email. So if you're listening, hopefully you can put that in the text box for me. So with that, I want to say 73 to each and every one of you. It's been a grand session. Gordon and I always enjoy the trivia when we can do them, and hopefully we'll talk to you in the morning. So with that, Gordon, I'm going to throw it your direction to explain to each and everyone listening about the new schedule, how it's being arranged. And then if you want to throw it back to me, I'll be more than happy to close this evening's session. So KY6B from Kilo 6 Sierra United November, can you handle that for me?
Well, Mademoiselle, I'll give it the college try. Gordon here, KY6B. Thanks, Kathy. Guys and gals, what I think Kathy is alluding to here is information that we've put out on our mass mailing. It's on our website. We're making some board decisions in changing some of our schedules. And I'm sorry to say it's due to the fact that we're not getting enough volunteer participation on South Cars to carry the programming level that we would like to carry for whatever reason. So, in essence, the global program that is normally running at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, and the Rag Chew program that's run at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings will be vacating those positions and moving to Thursday nights, the third week of every month. Let me buy a nickel. This means in doing so that the Thursday night will be sharing three programs. 1 month will be our TIN, the second month will be our global, and the third month will be our RAGJU, and then we'll rotate back to TIN, global, and RAGJU for the ensuing months. In addition, we will be adding an open Rag Chew on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. and on Sunday nights at 7 p.m., which will not have an officiated NCS running the program and is open for any of you members that would like to open a Rag Chew and take it from there. I hope that you've seen the information that's come out. Let me buy another nickel. And that's the way things are going to start here on June the 1st. So we got a little time to get there. That's the direction that the board of directors for your South Cars organization has felt we need to go at this time until we can get some more help. Did I say that properly, Kathy? KY6V, over.
Yes, you most definitely did, Gordon. And I hate to see it go, but, you know, it's starting to wear on those who are carrying all the sessions. And so we knew that we had to do something, and this was our best way to go. And, you know, it's always available on Saturday and Sunday for those general rag chews. And you can just come on here and talk as much as you'd like. So thanks, Gordon, for sharing that. And I want to thank everyone for being here this evening to join our trivia session. Please join us in the morning for the Sunday morning rag chew if you have the time. It will be about Mother's Day. And we're going to talk about some of those Mother's Day events you've had as well as the history of it. So hopefully you'll join us. But let me pause for a moment, and then I'm going to close this evening's net. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on our website, and that's www.voip.southcars.com. Your net controls for this session has been myself, Kilo 6 Sierra United November, along with Gordon, KY6V, saying 73, and closing this VOIP session. Thank you for your participation. The net is now closed and returned to regular amateur use. So on behalf of KY6V and Kilo 6 Sierra United November, we want to say bye-bye for now.